Ladies and gentlemen, the Prime Minister.
My fellow Singaporeans, last week we celebrated SG60. 60 may not seem like a major milestone, but for us, it carries deep meaning because it comes at a turning point in global history and it marks the start of a new chapter in our Singapore story. Today, the majority of Singaporeans were born after independence. This is so in my cabinet too. Most of us are from the post-65 generation. We did not live through the struggles of Singapore's earliest years. We did not join the rousing cries of Merdeka, nor did we experience the anguish and anxieties of separation. But we know this. We stand where we are today only because of the grit, courage, and sacrifices of those who came before us, especially our pioneer and Merdeka generations. So tonight, we honor all of you and thank you for your many contributions. Now it's our turn to carry forward what we have inherited and to write the next chapter of our Singapore story together. This next chapter opens in a more troubled and turbulent world. For decades, Singapore benefited from an American-led, rules-based global order. It was not perfect, but it brought peace and stability to the world. Because the rules applied to all, so even a small city-state like ours could compete fairly, we rode the waves of globalization and secured our place in the world. But today, the US is pulling back. That has weakened the multilateral system. The old norms and rules no longer hold. More countries are going their own, chasing narrow, immediate gains over shared progress. So now it is every country for itself. In a world where rivalry is intensifying and trust is in short supply. We've already seen conflicts in Europe and the Middle East. Asia is feeling the heat too. We've had a recent flare-up between India and Pakistan and a border dispute between Cambodia and Thailand. All this shows how precarious peace and stability have become. So the road ahead will not be easy. But we're not going to sit back and resign ourselves to being mere bystanders in a world shaped by others. We will take charge of our own destiny, and we will shape the future we want through our own actions and our own choices. In the recent general election, Singaporeans chose the team you trust to lead our country in this changed world. I thank everyone for your support and your mandate. My team and I take this responsibility very seriously. We have been working hard to engage and listen to you, review and improve our policies, and advance Singapore's interests abroad. Tonight, I want to speak plainly about how we can chart our course through this complex new era, and I'll focus on five key issues: our economy, our young, our seniors, our future plans, and most importantly, our Singapore spirit. I will start with the economy because it is on everyone's mind. A few months ago, the US announced its Liberation Day tariffs. Global financial markets reacted sharply, and this set off a wave of intense negotiations between America and many countries. Since then, many deals have been struck. And in these deals, the U.S. has lowered its tariffs for quite a number of countries. But they are still mostly in the range of 10 to 30%. And in fact, these are now the highest U.S. tariff rates in nearly a century. Between America and China, the tariffs are still not resolved. At their peak, they soared to unprecedented levels, nearly 150%. Both sides have been talking, and for now, the steepest tariffs have been suspended. But the tariffs on many goods still remain above 50%. And meanwhile, deep mistrust and suspicion continue to fester on both sides, affecting not just trade, but also the movement of people, capital, and ideas. The U.S. has maintained its 10% tariff on Singapore. This is the baseline rate. It's the lowest any country can get. But frankly, it gives us little comfort, because no one knows if or when the U.S. might raise the baseline or set higher tariffs on specific industries like pharmaceuticals or semiconductors. What we do know is that there will be more trade barriers in the world, and that means small and open economies like us will feel the squeeze. That is why we convened the Singapore Economic Resilience Task Force, chaired by DPM Gan Kim Yong, our task force man. Kim Yong and his team have been hard at work, traveling to different countries and negotiating deals to secure Singapore's interest. They have been rolling out targeted solutions to help businesses and workers. The task force is not just focusing on the immediate. It's also looking ahead to review and refresh our economic strategies. We are involving some of our younger office holders in this effort, together with industry partners and union leaders. We are doing this because the external shifts we see today are not temporary. America and China are likely to continue drifting apart. The global economy will become more contested and fragmented. So we will need a new economic blueprint to secure Singapore's future in a very different world. We will take a fresh look at many key issues, like how do we stay globally competitive amidst the rapid external changes? How do we secure access to green energy to power our future sustainably? Or how do we help enterprises to break into new markets, expand overseas, and become global leaders? These are all important issues which we will dive into. But tonight, I will focus on one overarching priority, on innovation and technology, because this is how we can sustainably raise our productivity and improve our lives. For over two decades now, we've invested heavily in R&D, and we've reaped the fruits of these investments. For example, one early bet was in biomedical sciences, and we now have a vibrant biomedical industry, which helped us during the COVID pandemic too. We are applying the same long-term approach to other frontier technologies. One such area is quantum computing. It's a completely new way of processing information with the potential to transform many industries. We have been building up capabilities in our universities and research institutes. It's still early days, but we may see breakthroughs 10 or 20 years from now. But it's not just about cutting-edge R&D. Equally, if not more important, is how quickly new technologies are adopted across the entire economy. And this is how we transformed in the past. Think back to the 1980s. We launched a nationwide computerization drive. Those of us who grew up then, like me, benefited because we didn't have computers at home, but we could learn about them in schools and even at community centers, like this computer club at none other than Marine Parade CC, where I took my first computer class too. And it wasn't just young people Workers were equipped and trained too. So everyone got familiar with using personal computers, and these became common in offices everywhere. So that transformed the way we worked and opened up new possibilities in every field. Then when the internet arrived in the 1990s, we again rode the wave and we propelled our nation forward. With each new wave of technology, we adapted, we upgraded, we lifted our whole country up. Now we are entering a new era driven by artificial intelligence or AI. Like the computer and the internet in the past, AI will be a defining technology of our time. AI has been advancing rapidly. Just 5 years ago, AI could not solve basic math problems reliably. Take this simple question. It's not a trick question. Everyone can answer it. But in the past, AI would give you a strange response like this. So they say AI is hallucinating. This year, AI took part in the International Math Olympiad. This was one of the questions. It's so complex, I can't even understand the question. But AI got it right. I won't show you the answer. I don't think anyone even understands the question, so let alone the answer. But AI got it right, and it achieved a gold medal in the Olympiad. And that's the power of AI today. And you can expect AI will only get better over time, not just to deal with advanced math problems, but also to solve real-world problems. And it will fundamentally change the way we live, work, and interact with one another. The thing about AI is that it is already accessible to many people today. If I ask who in this room has not used AI, please put up your hand, I think there will be very few hands. In the past, we turned to the internet whenever we needed to search for information. Now, many go straight to AI apps. We did a check and we asked Singaporeans how they are using AI. Apparently, one of the most popular users is to use it to help plan your holidays. I suppose it's not surprising since we all love to travel. And indeed, AI can recommend places to visit and even suggest a personalized itinerary for you. We are using AI in the civil service and we are seeing good results. For example, many government agencies have call centers. In the past, after every call, the officers had to manually write down a summary of the conversation. It was necessary to keep a proper record, but it was tedious and time-consuming. Now, AI can transcribe the call in all four official languages and automatically generate the summary in English. So officers can focus on what matters most, which is answering the calls and helping members of the public. But all this is just scratching the surface of what AI can do. The real game changer lies in using AI to raise productivity and create new value through every part of the economy. And the bigger companies are already doing this, and they are moving ahead, combining AI with robotics and autonomous machines. You can see this at Tuas Port, for example, which is highly automated. And we are studying how to do the same at Changi Airport to automate baggage handling and other airside operations. Or take, for example, the American MNC, GE Vernova. They chose to site their global turbine repair service center here in Singapore. Now, Singapore might not be the obvious place for such repair work, but this is no ordinary workshop. It's a high-tech facility. It uses AI to detect anomalies in turbine components, all in a matter of minutes. The system then alerts human operators and enables more precise and in-depth diagnosis. And this is why global companies choose Singapore, because of our ability to combine technology and human skills. And that's how we stay competitive, attract high-quality investments, and create good jobs for Singaporeans. But AI is not just for the big players. Every company can benefit. Take Q&M Dental, for example. I'm sure all of you are familiar with them. They use AI to help their dentists diagnose problems by analyzing the dental X-ray. And you can see it here in this image. Green means possible fillings. Red means potentially impacted teeth. And then there's dark red. You want as little dark red as possible, because that means potential tooth decay. And all this is done by AI in under a minute. Of course, the dentist still needs to check the results and decide on the best course of treatment. But AI makes the work better and faster. I've shared a few examples. There are many, many more possibilities. And we will equip and empower every enterprise, especially our SMEs, to harness AI effectively and sharpen their competitive edge. At the same time, we recognize that technology will change the way we work. Many jobs will evolve, but some jobs will disappear, and in their place, new jobs will be created. In the past, technological change created disruption, but also new opportunities, and people were able to upgrade to higher skilled and better paying jobs. Many worry that this time things will be different, because AI can do more than just help us at work. It can potentially replace many tasks, even entire jobs. I understand these concerns. And I assure you, even as we embrace AI and technology, we will not lose sight of our key priority. Singaporeans will always be at the center of everything we do. So we won't just rush headlong to adopt new technology. We will work closely with NTUC and the unions, with our union leaders and workers. We will redesign jobs and equip and empower every worker. We already see this in action at PSA. Crane operators were retrained to remotely supervise and manage multiple cranes and vehicles. It's a huge boost in productivity for the company. It also means safer and higher paying jobs for workers. So it's a win-win for everyone. Ultimately, our economic strategy is about jobs, jobs, and jobs. That's our number one priority. We will do more to help Singaporeans seize new job opportunities. We are stepping up job matching services. We are bringing more career fairs directly into our tertiary institutions to help our fresh graduates explore career possibilities and connect early with employers. We will launch a new job matching initiative at the town level. This will be led by the CDCs. They already have strong networks with local merchants, SMEs, and community partners. So they are well placed to match job seekers with vacancies, especially those who prefer to work closer to home. And our mayors will share more details soon. Importantly, we will continue to reskill and upskill our workers. This is why we've invested heavily in Skills Future. Last year, we introduced a new Skills Future Level Up program. That's for those who are 40 and above. You get $4,000 in Skills Future credits and training allowances of up to $3,000 a month for up to 24 months if you take time off from work to study full time. The Level Up program is off to a good start, but we already have enough experience with it to introduce two more enhancements. First, we will allow a portion of the training allowances to be claimed for part-time courses. So it's not just for full-time study, but part-time study can also apply. Second, we will expand the course offerings. Currently, most of the courses are offered by the Institutes of Higher Learning. We will offer and include more quality courses offered by industry leaders and private training providers. Our programs are helping mid-careers like Vinod Nanda Kumaran. He is 41 this year. He previously worked in logistics and as a private hire driver. He is passionate about football, so he started to analyze match data to predict how his favorite teams would perform. That sparked a deeper interest in the world of data science. And he used his skills future credits to pursue a diploma in data engineering. He graduated last year and is now pursuing a part-time degree in business analytics at SUSS. Meanwhile, he has secured a job at the university as a business intelligence developer. And he's using data to support decision-making and help improve operations at the university. Well done, Vinod. This is what our economic strategy is all about, helping every worker progress and succeed. And this is why we must keep building a dynamic economy, one that creates good jobs and better lives for all Singaporeans. We may not be able to match other countries in size or scale, but we will stay ahead in ideas, in innovation, and in our collective will to move forward together as one united people. We work hard to improve lives, not just for today, but to ensure a future our young can look forward to with confidence and hope. Today, young Singaporeans enjoy more opportunities than ever before. They benefit from many advantages that did not exist when I was growing up. In my primary one cohort of 1979, more than 40%, 40, more than 40% did not progress to post-secondary education. Now, virtually all students do so, and they have opportunities to travel and broaden their horizons. They can harness technology to learn, collaborate, and connect with the world. But they also face a very different and in some ways more complex set of challenges. Now, every generation worries about negative influences impacting their young people. This is so throughout history. Sometimes they worry with good reasons. Sometimes it's a bit of an overreaction. If you think back in the 1950s and 60s, comics was considered a bad influence. Truly, comics seemed to lead to juvenile delinquency. Rock music was frowned upon. It was seen as a corrupting Western influence that promoted a decadent lifestyle. In Singapore, we cut back on broadcasting rock music on the radio. We banned jukeboxes. In the early 70s, we didn't allow rock band Led Zeppelin to perform here. If you don't know Led Zeppelin, you are missing out on the good stuff. Gradually, we relaxed these restrictions. But my peers and I grew up with both comics and rock music. For me in particular, a lot of rock and roll. And we all turned out fine. And today, no one would consider these things harmful. But there are new risks, and some of them are real. Vaping is one serious concern. We have banned it in Singapore, but people are still smuggling vapes in and finding ways to get around our laws. Worse, it's not just e-cigarettes. Many of these vapes are laced with addictive and harmful substances like etomidate. So the vapes themselves are just the delivery device. The real danger is what's inside. Right now, it's etomidate. In future, it could be something worse, stronger, or far more dangerous drugs. So we will take much tougher action against vaping. So far, we've treated vaping like tobacco. At most, we impose a fine, but that's no longer enough. We will treat this as a drug issue and impose much stiffer penalties. That means jail sentences and more severe punishments for those who sell vapes with harmful substances. And for those addicted to vapes, we will provide supervision and rehabilitation to help them quit. We will step up nationwide enforcement, and we will mount a major public education drive, starting in schools and the institutes of higher learning and also during national service. MHA and MOH will lead the efforts, but this will be a robust whole-of-government exercise. The agencies have already started, and the ministries concerned will share more details soon. Another concern we have is the impact of technology on young people. Many parents worry that their children are spending too much time on screens, whether scrolling on social media, surfing the internet, or playing computer games. To be clear, this isn't a new worry. In the past, children were constantly reminded not to watch too much TV. But today's environment is on a wholly different scale. Everyone is online, always connected, and always within reach on their phones 24/7. So it's much harder for parents to set boundaries or even to know what their children are doing. And when young people become overly immersed in the virtual world, they may lose touch with the real one. They may grow up more socially isolated. They may be exposed to harmful or toxic content. And over time, all this can quietly chip away at their self-esteem, emotional development, and mental well-being. The use of AI by students is another emerging issue. One teacher told me he noticed his students' essays improve almost overnight. He was very surprised. What had he done to bring about such a dramatic change? So he checked and found out the students had been using ChatGPT to improve their writing. So now we feel a growing unease that students may over-rely on AI and take shortcuts, that they may not make the effort to learn and master the fundamentals, and that ultimately they may never learn to think for themselves. So how should we respond to all of these technological developments? The reality is we are living in a digital age. There are huge upsides to being digitally connected. Greater access to knowledge, more avenues to express ourselves, and new ways to connect with one another. So we must make full use of these technologies. But we must also be clear-eyed about the downsides and manage them carefully. And that means striking the right balance, a balance between protecting our young from the potential harms and equipping and empowering them to fully exploit the benefits of technology. And we have to start early, right from infancy. For infants and toddlers, the science is clear. No screen time at all. That's infants and toddlers. Even for preschoolers, we should be mindful and limit their screen time. That means we should not use phones as a babysitter just to keep our children quiet or occupied. Instead, we should encourage them to spend more time outdoors, playing, making friends, and being active. Let them run around in the parks and playgrounds. Give them space to explore on their own, to try, take some knocks, and get back up again. Through it all, they can learn, grow, and gain confidence in the real world, not the virtual one. We will do more to support parents in this journey. Some countries have passed new laws to tighten access to the internet and social media for children. We are studying their experiences closely to understand what truly works. And we will consider what more we can do to strengthen online safety for children. At the same time, as our children grow older, they will need to navigate the digital world with confidence. We must help them build digital resilience so they understand the risk, gain the skills and know-how, and learn to use technology safely and effectively. In schools, our teachers play an important role. They teach students about cyber wellness and they instill good digital habits. More importantly, our teachers help students become discerning and responsible users of technology. And that means don't blindly trust everything the internet or AI says, but question, reflect, and form your own judgments. I mentioned a teacher just now who realized his students were using ChatGPT to improve their essays. He could have banned it outright, but he saw a chance to turn it into a learning opportunity. So he got the class to read and discuss the AI-generated essays. Then he challenged them, don't just accept what AI gives you, critique it, find ways to make it better. That's the kind of teaching no AI can replace. And that's the dedication our teachers bring to their students every single day. Our teachers are also using AI in many creative ways to improve learning outcomes. Take the example of Ms. Francesca Lau, who is a Chinese teacher at Corporation Primary. Many of her students speak English at home, so they have no opportunity to use their mother tongue outside the classroom. She created an AI chatbot to help her students practice Mandarin. So now they can do so anytime and receive feedback on their response. Let me show you a video.
我看了觉得很开心，因为他们邻居之间懂得怎么互相帮助和协共处。你觉得我今天的表现怎么样？你今天的表现非常棒，你能够抓住录像的重点内容，说明你有认真思考和努力表达。总理，您以后也可以用这个口试机器人来练习你的华文哦。Thank
you, Jason. I will take up your suggestion. That was AI chatbot for Mandarin. Hopefully there will be chatbots for other languages too, and I'm sure for other circumstances. Beyond schools, we are strengthening the digital skills of our students at the tertiary level. And it's not just for those studying computer science or engineering, but for students across all disciplines. In the past, when you talk about digital skills, you think about, you know, how to use a word processor or a spreadsheet. Now, we have to upgrade what it means to have digital skills. And now we are teaching students to build and use AI models to generate ideas and solve problems in their field. And this way, they will be better equipped for a world where technology is embedded in every profession. With technology advancing so quickly, some parents may feel the need to start their children earlier, help them learn faster and cover more content from a younger and younger age. But let's have a care, because learning has never been just about packing in more content and knowledge. It's about developing the ability to think, to solve problems, and to keep learning throughout life. And in this age of AI, what really matters are the human qualities that machines cannot replicate. Character, values, empathy, and a sense of purpose, these are far more important. And that's why we will do more in these areas by deploying more allied educators and teacher counselors across our schools and putting greater emphasis on character and citizenship education. This is the key priority for our school leaders and educators, and I hope parents will give them their full support. Because we are preparing our students not for exams, but for life. We want them to have the curiosity to keep learning, the empathy to care for those around them, and importantly, the confidence and resilience to take on the challenges that life will surely throw at them. Recently at Temasek Polytechnic, I met two design students, Faith Pang and Muhammad Noor Khan. They showed me how they are learning to use AI tools as part of the design process. And I asked them, are you worried that AI might replace you one day? They said, no, because AI will not be able to replace the creativity, heart, and human spirit they bring to their work. And I said to them, good on you. That's the mindset that will set you apart. Faith and Noah are not alone. I've met many other young Singaporeans who share the same spark and sense of purpose. I engage our youths regularly. I find them thoughtful and full of ideas. They have their own views and they are not afraid of speaking up. They are certainly more articulate and confident than when I was at their age. So each time I meet them, I walk away feeling hopeful about our future. Today, young Singaporeans have more diverse pathways than ever to pursue their interests and chase their dreams. They are no longer limited to traditional career options. They now have many pathways to explore in startups and social enterprises, in the arts, sports, and creative industries, or striking out on their own as content creators or change makers in their communities. There is no single route to success. What matters is that they feel supported to grow, to experiment, to take risks, and find their own way forward. And that's what the government will do. We will back you with opportunities, resources, and guidance. After graduation, I know many are concerned about jobs, especially with the current economic uncertainty. I shared earlier what we will do to grow the economy and create good jobs for Singaporeans. There's one other thing we can do in the near term. Remember what happened during COVID. Many companies stopped hiring for full-time jobs, but some were prepared to offer traineeships. And this gave graduates the chance to gain real-world experience. They received an allowance during the training, and they could keep their skills sharp so that when the economy recovered, they would be in a better position to secure full-time jobs. One such trainee was Shahinda Abdul Halil. She graduated from Nanyang Poly in 2021, right in the middle of COVID. She took up a traineeship program offered by the financial services firm, JP Morgan. She did well and was offered a full-time job after the training. And she has just been promoted to Associate Technology Project Manager. The program was beneficial in more ways than one, because she got to know a fellow trainee. They fell in love, and they are now married. And both husband and wife are here. Today, companies continue to offer traineeships, but with government support, they can offer more training opportunities. So we will launch a new government-funded traineeship program for ITE, Polytechnic, and university graduates. We will begin with a more focused rollout, and if the economy worsens, we will scale up the program. And the task force will share more details soon. Besides jobs, we will continue to focus on areas that matter to young Singaporeans, including housing and parenting. We've made several major moves over the past year. We've built more HDB flats with higher subsidies, and we've provided more leave for young parents and more help to reduce parenting costs. We are studying additional measures to better support you through every stage of life. To all our students and young Singaporeans, I know that growing up is not easy. The world today can feel overwhelming, the future at times distant and unclear. But I say to you, do not fear. You are not alone on this journey. We see you, we hear you, and we will walk with you every step of the way. So to all young Singaporeans, go forth, chase your rainbow, and blaze your own trail. Besides nurturing our young, we will also take good care of our seniors. Our society is aging rapidly, and I'll show you a chart that illustrates this. In 2015, when we celebrated SG50, about 13% of Singaporeans were aged 65 and above. Today, as we mark SG60, it is just over 20% over a period of 10 years. According to the United Nations, a country with 21% or more of its population aged 65 and above is considered super aged. We will likely cross that mark by next year. In 10 years' time, when we have SG70, we expect the figure to rise to over 25%. The good news is that Singaporeans are living longer. And we can see this all around us, in our families, our neighborhoods, and our communities. During walkabouts, MPs meet many more seniors, even centenarians. Here is Haslina with her Fengshan resident, Madam Wong. She doesn't look like it, but Madam Wong is 100 years old. Our ground experience is borne out in the statistics. 2 decades ago, there were 400 people in Singapore aged 100 and above. Today, it is close to 1,500 and continuing to rise. What I've just described is our life expectancy or our lifespan. Some live to 90s, 100 or more, but on average, it is now almost 84 years. But we also look at another measure that adjusts the lifespan to focus only on the years when we are in good health. We call this the health span. Our average health span is 75 years. And that means we spend on average about 10 years living with illness or disability. And we must try to bring this figure down and certainly not allow it to get bigger. Because imagine if you retire at 65, you may have another 20 or more years ahead of you. How will you feel if much of that time is spent in and out of hospital or on a wheelchair? It will be tough, not just for the individual, but for the family too. So the key is to have both longer and healthier lives. Ideally, our health span should be closer to our lifespan. Technology can help with this, with better early detection of disease and better and more effective treatments and cures, including for one's life-threatening ailments like cancer and heart disease. But a lot of effective interventions do not involve technology. There are many simple things we can all do to stay healthy, like watch what we eat, cut back on excessive sugar and salt, exercise regularly, and stay socially connected and mentally active. I know all these sound so easy, but we also know it takes tremendous discipline and effort. If you are in your 20s and 30s, you may feel you are invincible, nothing can go wrong. Even in your 40s, it's easy to think that you're still all right and you can leave health matters to later. But the truth is, your quality of life when you are older depends on the actions you take today. And that's why it's important to orientate our entire healthcare system towards promoting health, not just treating sickness. That's why we launched Healthier SG. Whole idea is to ensure Singaporeans have a regular family doctor. And you don't just see the doctor when you're sick, but you work with your doctor to develop a health plan. Then the doctor will advise whether you need to make lifestyle changes in your diet or exercise regularly or go for health screening. And hopefully with doctor's instructions, that will motivate you to do something and work towards better outcomes by the next appointment. So far, more than 1.3 million residents have signed up for Healthier SG. I encourage those who have not done so to come on board. Work with your own family doctors to take charge of your health. Now, Healthier SG is making an impact. Take the example of 77-year-old Madam Adeline Lim, whom I met recently. She enrolled for Healthier SG, and the doctor advised her to stay active. So she tracks her steps and her exercise with her watch and the Healthy 365 app. She showed me how she uses it. Look at this. Look at this. More than 7,000 steps. Lots of MVPA. What's MVPA? Moderate and vigorous physical activity. She tries to do this every single day, which is remarkable. And she accumulates points as she stays active, as you see from the top. With more than 1,500 health points, she can redeem $10 in supermarket or public transport vouchers. It's a small incentive, but it keeps her going. Well done, Madam Lim. To complement Healthier SG, we also launched AgeWell SG. That's to help our seniors lead more active and fulfilling lives and to prevent loneliness, which is the biggest enemy of seniors. Through AgeWell SG, we are making the living environment more inclusive for seniors. For example, we have improvements at home through ease, as well as senior-friendly streets, therapeutic gardens, and elderly fitness corners around the neighborhood. And we also deliver a wide range of programs to help seniors stay active and engaged. And it's heartening to see that more and more seniors are doing their part to lead active lifestyles. For example, at the Yio Chu Kang Swimming Complex every Tuesday morning, you will hear enthusiastic shouts. It's not from children, but from this group that call themselves the AMA Flipper Ball Team. These are seniors in their 60s, 70s, even their 80s, playing flipper ball. Flipper ball is a modified version of water polo. And you can see from this picture, they take their game very seriously. They dive for the ball and they challenge one another in the pool. And through flipper ball, they build strong friendships. They organize trips together, celebrate birthdays, and support one another through life's ups and downs. As one player said, "I've spent most of my life being a wife and then a mother, but now I found myself again. Well done to everyone in the Amma Flipper Ball team. We will continue to do more to support our seniors, but there's still one major issue we have to tackle, and that's their long-term care and living arrangements. One solution is community care apartments, or CCAs. That's a joint initiative by MND and MOH. CCAs are HDB flats that combine housing with care arrangements for seniors. So the flats come with senior-friendly features, like wheelchair-accessible bathrooms with grab bars and slip-resistant floors. And the seniors subscribe to a package of services, like home fixes, health checks, or housekeeping. Within the block, there is a center in the block itself with full-time staff to coordinate the delivery of these services. And that serves as an activity center for residents, so they can gather there daily, meet their friends, and take part in activities. The staff are on shift 24/7, and if the senior needs any urgent help, someone will be there on site to attend to their needs. Earlier this year, I visited our first CCA project, Harmony Village at Bukit Batok. And the residents told me they were very happy to live there. I told Desmond Lee, who was then Minister for National Development, that we need more CCAs. So now Chee Hong Tat is in MND pursuing this. We will build more CCAs across HDB towns over the coming years. But CCAs cannot be the main solution. There is a limit to how many new CCAs we can build. Furthermore, many seniors don't want to move out. They have stayed in their homes for many years, and they are used to their neighbors and familiar with their current environment. So they prefer to age where they are, and we will need to provide for them as they get older. In particular, we see many more seniors in older housing estates. Take Toa Payoh, for example, which is one of our oldest towns. Nearly one quarter of residents in Toa Payoh are 65 and above. It's already a super aged town. Many of them live with caregivers, their children or domestic helpers. But today, more and more seniors are living on their own. And this reflects our changing demographic. We have more singles and couples without children. Even amongst those with children, family sizes are smaller. In the past, it was common to have many children, and then one would often take on the role of the caregiver. Nowadays, families have one or two children. By the time the parents reach their 60s or 70s, the children would be in their 30s or 40s with young families of their own to care for. So many seniors choose to live independently in order not to burden their children. How should we care for them then? In fact, we've been studying this matter. How can we better support seniors in Toa Payoh and other older towns? As I said, the CCA is not going to be the primary solution. But we can take the essential elements from the CCA and apply the same thinking to the wider neighborhood to build age-well neighborhoods that support our seniors wherever they are. I visited Toa Payoh recently with the team. We spoke to residents and looked at the possibilities. So let me share some of our ideas with you. First, we will make physical touch points more accessible to seniors. In Toa Payoh, we started 4 years ago with 6 active aging centers. You can see them here in this map. There are now 13 AACs. The additional ones are here. That may sound like a lot, but if you look at the map, some seniors still have to walk more than 1 kilometer just to reach the nearest center. So we will identify new sites to make it more convenient for seniors. And more space also means more activities and facilities. For example, gym rooms are very popular. And we can offer more varied forms of exercise, even kickboxing, which some seniors have taken up. or this activity called cardio drumming. You can see Grace and I joining in the activity. It looks easy, but you can really work up a sweat. Somehow, these activities appeal more to women. You look at the pictures, a lot of women, very few men. So we are also working on programs that can interest the men, including hands-on activities like these carpentry workshops. If you have other ideas, please let us know. We want these centers to be places where seniors can meet regularly, stay connected, and forge close friendships. And some may even go one step further by contributing and volunteering, like this group offering DIY repair services for wheelchairs, shows that seniors don't just want to be looked after, they want to care for others too. Second, we will expand home-based services. These services will be similar to those offered at the CCA. So you don't have to stay at the CCA, but you can access home-based services. Seniors can choose what they need. These can include services like simple home fixes and basic health checks. And for those with additional needs, we will provide more options like housekeeping, laundry, and meal deliveries, or assistance with activities of daily living like showering and feeding. And we will have dedicated care staff to help coordinate these services. They will also visit the seniors regularly and be the first responders in times of emergency. Third, we will bring healthcare services closer to the seniors. We will have more care facilities for those who need rehab and physiotherapy. The public hospitals will set up health posts in the community, and these health posts will deploy nurses on the ground more regularly. They will help with post-discharge follow-up and medication management. And the seniors can drop by for basic care and health consultations without having to travel to a clinic. So these are some of the ideas we are working on. In other countries, what I've just described might be considered a retirement village. But in Singapore, we don't want our seniors to live in separate, isolated places. Instead, we will have age-well neighborhoods within our HDB towns and amongst residents of all ages. We will start in Toa Payoh and one or two other areas with a higher concentration of seniors. And then we will test the ideas, learn what works, and scale up progressively. And MND and MOH will share more details when they are ready. Through these efforts, we will build a Singapore where every senior, no matter where they stay, can age with dignity, purpose, and joy. A Singapore where we support one another as neighbors and friends in our community. And that's how we will grow old, not in isolation, never alone, but always together as one Singapore family. As we look after and support one another, we must also treasure our physical spaces and environment, because this little island is all we have, and we must make the most of it. That also means protecting ourselves against climate change and rising sea levels. The work has already begun, and we will accelerate it in the years ahead. For example, at Pulau Tekong, we are building a polder. That's a low-lying reclaimed land. The construction started in 2018, back when I was at MND, and the project will be completed later this year. It will give the SAF new training areas, which you can see here, equivalent to the size of two Toa Payoh towns. And it's not just more land, but a dike to protect against rising sea levels. We are enhancing coastal protection all around the island. We are starting with the most vulnerable areas. We have the Long Island Project for the southeastern shorelines and protection works around Changi Bay. We are developing plans for other parts of Singapore too. Land is limited and precious in Singapore, so we will do whatever it takes to protect what we have today. At the same time, we have to continually rejuvenate and refresh our existing land and reimagine new uses for them. URA just released its latest draft master plan, which sets out our thinking for development over the next 10 to 15 years. So tonight, let me share with you some of these ideas. In the past, we've spoken about our plans for the West, the East, and the Central regions. Some people say that the northern part of Singapore is more ulu, more remote. I assure you it's not, so tonight I will focus on the north. And I will highlight three areas: Woodlands, Kranji, and Sembawang. Let me start with Woodlands. It's our northern gateway into Singapore. Malaysia Prime Minister Anwar and I recently witnessed the signing of the agreement to establish the Johor-Singapore Special Economic Zone, or SEZ. The SEZ has great potential for both sides to tap on complementary strengths and grow together. To maximize this potential, we must improve cross-border connectivity. Today, the causeway is the busiest land crossing in the world, and it gets very congested, especially during weekends and holidays, and it creates disamenities for residents too. We will redevelop the Woodlands checkpoint with acquired land around the old Woodlands Town Centre and the surrounding areas, and we will reclaim additional land. So we will have an expanded Woodlands checkpoint. It will be 5 times bigger. That means more efficient and secure clearances, shorter waiting times, and less traffic congestion. By the end of next year, we aim to open another link to Malaysia, the Johor Bahru-Singapore RTS link. The RTS link station in Singapore will be at Woodlands. It will be directly connected to Woodlands North MRT station along the Thompson East Coast line. So this will make cross-border travel much more convenient. There will be seamless transfer between the RTS and the MRT. Passengers can clear both Singapore and Malaysian immigration at the point of departure. There's no need to queue again upon arrival. And around the RTS link station, we will build flexible industrial spaces. This will support businesses seeking to take full advantage of the SEZ. There will be spaces for new homes too. Nearby, next to Admiralty Park, around 4,000 HDB units in a new Housing by the Woods precinct. And we have also set aside space for more housing, including public housing, along the Woodlands waterfront. So together, all these developments will reshape and transform Woodlands into a modern and vibrant regional center. Next, Kranji. For the past 25 years, when you speak of Kranji, you think of horse racing. But over time, the popularity of horse racing has declined and the land hasn't really been well utilized. So we've taken back the land and we will give it a new lease of life. It's a large site, as you can see here, about 130 hectares, roughly 200 football fields. So it's a rare opportunity for a major transformation. As a first step, we will improve connectivity. The area is already well connected to Woodlands, which is served by both the North-South line and the Thompson East Coast line. We are building a new MRT station at Sungai Kadut. And this will also be an interchange connecting the North-South line and the downtown line. So connectivity will get better. But what's special about this site is its natural surroundings. To the north, we have a new Mandai Mangrove and Mudflat Nature Park. To the south, there's the Mandai Wildlife Reserve, which now features 5 different wildlife parks, including the zoo and the bird paradise. Running through the area is the rail corridor and also a waterway, Sungai Mandai. So it's a site with all the right ingredients, ample space, good connectivity, and nature at its doorstep. And we will build a new public housing estate here in Kranji. There's space for 14,000 new homes, more than Bidadari New Town. The homes will be nestled amidst lush green spaces and supported by more amenities, including a new neighborhood center around the Kranji MRT. And this will be a new housing development combining urban living with our rich natural heritage. And it's something we can all look forward to in about 10 years' time. Finally, Sembawang and Sembawang Shipyard. Those must be our friends from Sembawang. Older Singaporeans will remember its historical significance. The British built a naval base here in 1938. After the Royal Navy left, we converted the naval docks into Sembawang Shipyard. President Shears officially opened it in 1971. Sembawang Shipyard played a key role in our early industrialization and powered the growth of our maritime industry. As we redevelop the area, we will preserve the rich maritime character of the site. One striking feature is the dry dock. It was then the world's biggest dry dock. And there are many possibilities for creative reuse of the space. We've been gathering ideas from the public, and let me show you some of the feedback. We could make this a community space for sports, for concerts, performances, and events, or a plaza for people to get together with their family, friends, and loved ones. Beyond the dry dock itself, there are many other things we can do with the rest of the site. And it's also a large area, about 3 times the size of Ang Mo Kio Town Center. We can capitalize on the coastline to develop something special. There will be homes with waterfront living. We can have new concepts for dining and shopping, as well as community spaces along the promenade. And when you put it all together, this can become a new, vibrant waterfront destination in the north, rich in heritage, yet reimagined for the future. In Singapore, you know that we don't just plan. We make things happen. Nearly 20 years ago, we talked about Punggol 21. Back then, there wasn't much there. And today, Punggol is a thriving, beautiful town. Tonight, I've shared our plans for Kranji and Sembawang. Just as we transform Punggol, these plans will take shape in the years ahead, and they will become reality. And when they do, Kranji and Sembawang will flourish as even more vibrant towns, full of life and opportunity. And that's how we make sure every part of Singapore shines, each with its own character, and a place we can all be proud to call home. So even as climate shifts and circumstances evolve, one thing is certain. Singapore's progress will never be left to chance. We are and have always been a nation that adapts, reinvents, and dares to dream. And together, we will keep building a better and more vibrant Singapore. For Singapore and Singaporeans to continue progressing, good plans and strategies are just the first step. What matters just as much, and even more, is the collective will of our people. We must believe in one another. We must have the conviction that our best days lie ahead. That's the Singapore spirit that binds us together and propels us forward. Our pioneers embodied this spirit. The Founders Memorial recently started Project Citizens. It's an effort to capture the stories of the first 1 million Singaporeans who received their thing laminated NRICs back in 1966. Amongst them was Madam Florence Yen Siu Mei. She lived through the fear and uncertainty of the racial riots. Yet what stayed with her was how neighbors, regardless of background, came together to support one another, like sharing food during the curfews. She is the eldest of 13 children in the family. From a young age, she had to work to support her family. But she never gave up. She attended night school, learned English, and worked her way up to become a manager in a cosmetic company leading a team of sales assistants. And now at 85, she remains active and continues to volunteer in her community. We salute you, Madam Yen, and all our pioneers. Stories like this remind us of the grit and quiet strength of our pioneers. They went through immense hardship, but they faced these trials and tribulations together. And in doing so, they grew closer as one people. Their experiences give them a deep sense of shared purpose and common destiny. So they looked out not just for themselves, but also for one another, as fellow Singaporeans. Later generations did not go through the same crucible of hardship. Those of us growing up soon after independence would remember what life was like in the 70s, a time of transition for our nation. But for younger Singaporeans, today Singapore is the only one they have ever known. They may still hear stories from their grandparents or their great-grandparents if they are lucky, but with each passing generation, those stories become more distant and less vivid. No doubt, we've faced our own challenges and trials. Most recently, we had to deal with the COVID pandemic. It cannot compare with what our pioneers went through. War, poverty, deprivation, riots. But COVID was the crisis of our generation. And in that moment of need, we stood together. We looked out for each other, and we got through the pandemic, not only because of government measures, but because of our Singapore spirit. COVID is over. It feels like a bad dream. We want to forget it and put it behind us. But the spirit we summoned then must not fade. And it shouldn't be something that emerges only during a crisis. We must keep this spirit alive through good times and bad and make it part of how we live and relate to one another every day. That means strengthening our bonds with one another. It means feeling that we are all in this together and not just looking out for our own self-interest. We say this in our national pledge. It starts with a simple but profound statement. We, the citizens of Singapore. It's not I or me, it is we. To keep Singapore going, we must be a we first society. Because if everyone only thinks about me and puts me ahead of we, then we are finished. Society will fray and things will fall apart. But if each of us does our part for the we, care, contribute, and look out for one another, then the me will thrive and flourish too. Because when the whole is strong, each of us becomes stronger too. And that's how we strengthen the Singapore spirit. And so we have to do more to encourage Singaporeans to step forward, to take responsibility for one another, and to shape the character and future of our society. The government cannot force or direct this, but we can encourage and support, and we will certainly recognize and celebrate these efforts. So tonight, I'll share three examples. The first is Yasser Amin. He shared his story with me when I met him last year. Back in 2020, he chanced upon a Telegram group that organized beach cleanups. He was curious and decided to give it a try. And he has been volunteering ever since. Not just volunteering, now he runs his own cleanup sessions. So if you are keen, join him on Saturday mornings at East Coast Beach. There's also Siti Adriana binti Muhammad Rasib, who is here with us too. She interned at the Ministry of Social and Family Development. And through the course of her internship, she learned about the challenges faced by lower-income families. That inspired her to co-found the Empowered Families Initiative. It supports lower-income families through grants, match savings, and peer support networks. It has helped improve the lives of many families, and some in turn have stepped up to volunteer with her, paying it forward. Well done. I've shared two young examples, so my third one is a senior. Mr. Koh Seng Chun, the 2024 Straits Time Singaporean of the Year. After a successful career as a management consultant, he set up Dignity Kitchen. It provides employment for persons with disabilities so they can find dignity through work. I visited Dignity Kitchen recently and witnessed the remarkable work they are doing. They do much more than just create jobs. They restore hope, unlock potential, and show us what it means to build a society where every person can live with dignity. And these are goals that we must all strive for together. These examples show how, when we do our part to step up, we strengthen the bonds between us and we keep the Singapore spirit thriving. In many countries, you see such ground-up collective actions because the governments are not working. The governments are ineffective. So people are frustrated at the lack of action and progress, and they step forward to take matters into their own hands. Singapore is in a different position. No one wants the government to do less. No one wants the government to become ineffective. Instead, we strive to be more efficient and responsive. And there are areas where we believe the government can and should do more, especially to provide stronger social support for those in need. But it's not just about what the government does. And we certainly don't want to end up as a society where people rely solely on the government. It's about all of us, government, businesses, workers, and unions, community groups, and civil society doing our part, all coming together for the good of Singapore and our fellow citizens and moving forward together as one. That's how my team and I intend to lead, not just doing things for Singaporeans, but doing things with Singaporeans. We've organized hackathons so that citizens can use technology to solve problems. We've convened citizens' panels to study and propose policy changes on a range of issues, from tackling diabetes to improving employment resilience. Through youth panels, we've empowered young people to develop initiatives on financial literacy, job opportunities, digital resilience, and recycling. We will continue to do all these and more. We will open up more avenues for you to be heard and to get involved. Not just to give feedback and share ideas, but to partner us and your fellow Singaporeans, to roll up our sleeves, come up with solutions, and turn good ideas for a better Singapore into reality. The process will not always be smooth. It can be messy, iterative, and slower than we would like. But if we persevere, I am confident we will reach better outcomes, because we will build stronger trust, deeper ownership, and a greater sense of common purpose. And together, we will keep our Singapore spirit alive, not just for today, not just for tomorrow, but for many more generations to come. This Singapore spirit, our collective will to defy the odds, our confidence in a shared future, and our belief in one another has always been our driving force. It has lifted us from improbable beginnings to become a shining example of what a small country can achieve. 60 years is not long in the life of a nation, but for Singapore, every one of these years has been hard-earned through the grit, sacrifice, and determination of our people. In the past, when you told someone overseas you were from Singapore, you might have been met with puzzled looks. Where is Singapore? Today, there is often instant recognition. The Singapore brand is admired and held in high regard. People are amazed that this little red dot has come so far in just a few decades. What's next for Singapore beyond SG60? Something that we have already made it, or even reached our peak. After all, we have gone from third world to first. So they ask, can we really keep this up? Surely there's not much further to go beyond first. But that's a misconception. Yes, we have come a long way, and we are now at a higher level. Yet we cannot stand still. Because in today's world, standing still is the same as falling behind. We either press on to go onward and upward, or we will slide downwards. And pressing on means more than just keeping pace. It means dreaming bigger, being bolder in pushing new frontiers, and being ready to try new things, even if we stumble or fall, because that's the only way to rise higher. It's the same in sports. A few weeks ago, we hosted the World Aquatics Championships. Our Team Singapore athletes went head-to-head with the very best in the world. Swimmer Gan Ching Hui was not intimidated. She rose to the challenge. She made the 1,500-meter freestyle finals and broke 3 national records along the way. She said, "We are just a tiny red dot, but I think we are capable of achieving great things." That same spirit must guide us as a nation. We may be small in size, but together we can achieve great things. And greatness is not just found in big projects. It's also in the aspirations and hopes of every Singaporean. The student striving to do better. The parent working hard for the family. The volunteer and silent unsung heroes stepping forward to make a difference. Each of these speak to the heart of who we are as Singaporeans. We take pride in whatever we do and strive to be the best possible versions of ourselves. We never give up and we never let each other down. That's how we've achieved exceptional performance, and that's how we will continue to stay exceptional as a people and a country. Above all, we have faith. Faith in our community, in one another, and in Singapore. Faith that there is no challenge we cannot overcome, no goal we cannot achieve if we stand together. And if we hold fast to that faith, we will keep breaking new ground. We will mark new milestones, not with loud fanfare, but with quiet confidence. We will write the next chapter of our Singapore story beyond SG60. And we will do it together, side by side, as one exceptional and united Singapore. Thank you very much and good night.
And Prime Minister Lawrence Wong has just wrapped up this year's National Day rally, his first after winning electoral victory in May. He lays out how the country will move beyond the first 60 years of nationhood and write the next chapter of the Singapore story. Jobs remain a number one priority against a challenging global economy and the rapid evolution of AI. Job seekers will get localized help, be it in towns or schools, including a new traineeship program for fresh graduates. Young people will also get more safeguards against the risks of today. Now, vaping will be treated as a drug issue, with tougher penalties like jail time for sellers. More guidance, too, in the responsible use of devices and AI. Neighbourhoods will also be redesigned to bring services closer to seniors, and better care will help them stay healthier for longer and age with dignity and purpose. Even as he sets out such plans, PM Wong says Singaporeans must believe in one another. And in that, the best days lie ahead.
The road ahead will not be easy. But we're not going to sit back and resign ourselves to being mere bystanders in a world shaped by others. We will take charge of our own destiny, and we will shape the future we want through our own actions and our own choices.
And that wraps up our National Day Rally Show. For more reactions and analysis, do tune in to Singapore Tonight later at 10. And don't forget, headlines anytime at cna.asia and on CNA 938 Radio. Plus, we're also on Facebook and YouTube. Thanks for watching and have a good night.